"You think I find any of what you said crazy?" he asked.
"I hope not. But it would put you in the minority."
"Good. I prefer to be in the minority. The masses don't know what they're missing out on."
"Oh." She looked up at him. "Thank you. For believing in me."
"Always, Clara."
He bent and brushed his lips over hers. The softest of gestures.
"Let me show you how much."
"Yes," she whispered. Very deliberately, August turned and walked to the studio door. Just as deliberately, he turned the lock, the click sounding overly loud in the empty room. He returned and stopped just in front of her. He bowed low and straightened.
"Dance with me."
Her lips parted. "I beg your pardon?"
"May I have the privilege of this dance, Miss Haywood?"
"Here? Now? But..."
"No regrets, Miss Haywood. And no excuses."
"And no music, either," she said with a slow smile.
"Inconsequential details," August scoffed.
He held out his hand. He saw Clara swallow before she reached out and took it. Her hand was warm in his, and he pulled her to him, his other hand coming to slide around her waist. Her fingers tightened in his, and he heard her slight inhalation.
"Close your eyes," he said.
"August..."
"Close your eyes."
She gazed at him for a second longer before her eyes fluttered shut. Her free hand went to his shoulder, her fingertips just brushing the back of his neck.
"Perfect,"
he whispered, before he led her in the first step. It wasn't the reckless waltz that they had danced a decade ago, surrounded by glittering lights and glittering people. There was no orchestra to keep the time, no constant hum of those trying to make their voices heard over the voices of others. This was a private affair, meant only for them, danced in a small space, and danced in silence. But it was no less powerful for it. August tightened his grip on her waist, pulling her flush against him as they moved in slow circles across the floor in front of the dais. Clara's hand slid farther around the back of his neck, her fingers tangling gently in the back of his hair. He could feel her body, hot and supple against his, her chest rising and falling. She matched him step for step, and August wondered idly if she could feel the way his heart was thundering in his chest. He drew the hand that held hers into the space between their bodies, tucking it securely against his chest, and lifted his fingers to stroke her cheek. She kept her eyes closed, but her lips curled, and she tipped her head into his touch. God, she was so beautiful like this. So beautiful always, but like this. She was his. She belonged to him in this moment. He bent his head and caught her lips with his, their steps slowing until they stopped altogether. As before, their kiss started slowly, only for different reasons this time. This time, August wasn't afraid of scaring her or hurting her. This time, he was afraid only that he wouldn't make this last the way he wanted it to, that he wouldn't be able to make good on his promise to her that he would take his time, learning what made her whimper and writhe with pleasure. Because, holy hell, he wanted her. Wanted her so badly that he ached everywhere. His skin felt two sizes too small, and his cock throbbed. The need to take her then, right there on the floor in the middle of the damn studio, was pounding through him, making him dizzy with want. His hands slid from her face and over her shoulders and down her back, where they gripped her as though he was afraid to let her go. And then she moaned, and her mouth opened, and her tongue stroked his, and he was completely lost. His hands dropped to her ass, and he hauled her up against him the way he had done once before. She wrapped her legs around him, but her skirts hampered her movements, and it wasn't enough.
"I want you naked. Now."
His voice was rough.
"Yes."
She slid down the length of him, the friction sending all sorts of uncontrollable shudders through him. He set to work at her bodice, realizing that his hands weren't entirely steady. He fumbled slightly at the ties until he felt her hands on his, pulling them away.
"You can watch," she said, looking at him through heavily lidded eyes. Her lips parted, and her color high.
His cock twitched, and he groaned with need. Clara took over where he had left off, with a slow, subtle tease, as one by one the laces and ties that held her gown and her stays were undone, the garments falling to the floor. Soundlessly. She stood before him in her shift, the outline of her body a tantalizing breath away, so close, and yet so far. Her eyes dropped to the bulge at the fall of his trousers, and a sultry smile touched her lips, even as her fingers played with the ribbon at the neck of her shift.
"Steady, Your Grace," she whispered.
August remained still, his breath coming far too fast. Very deliberately she pulled the end of the ribbon and the top of her chemise loosened, slipping over one shoulder and then the other, before it too joined the pile on the rug at their feet. And Clara Hayward stood before him, wearing nothing but a smile. His heart might have stopped momentarily before it resumed, thundering in his ears with the same rhythm that was pulsing through the rest of him. The sound obliterated everything around him, his eyes riveted on her fingers, which were now trailing over the slope of her left breast, coming to circle her dark nipple, hard and pebbled under her touch. She was watching him, watching her. And he had never been as aroused as he was then.
"Don't stop there,"
he rasped. Clara's eyes darkened, and her hand slid lower. Her fingers caressed the gentle swell of her abdomen before slipping through the dark curls at the juncture of her legs. He watched as she stroked a finger through the folds of her sex, her eyes fluttering closed, and her head tipping back. Her hand circled low and hard, and a soft whimper escaped. She withdrew her hand, her finger wet with her desire, and it snapped whatever control he'd managed to maintain. August didn't remember moving, but he hauled her up and against him, and in two steps he had mounted the low dais and deposited her on the edge of the wide settee in the center. He came to kneel just in front of her, her legs falling open as she leaned back. He placed his hands on the back of her calves, running them up and over her thighs, spreading his fingers to caress as much of that smooth, soft skin as he could. His thumb skinned the indentation of her hip bones while his fingers cupped the firm roundness of her ass.
"Don't stop there," she whispered,
and he might have laughed if he hadn't been so hot and so hard. August bent his head and covered her sex with his mouth and felt her body tense even as she sighed. He caressed her with his tongue, the way she had just done with her own fingers, the muscles in her thighs trembling under his touch. He found the bud at the apex of her folds and stroked it, her hips arching off the settee. He did it twice more, then stopped only to gaze at her, her head thrown back and her hands tangled in the emerald silk. Her eyes opened, dismay cleared. "Don't stop," she said, and he could hear the frustration and desire in each syllable. Her breasts were rising and falling with each rapid breath she took, and he couldn't look away. He rose, coming to kneel over her, bending his head to take one of her nipples in his mouth. He sucked and nipped and let the noises she was making in the back of her throat guide him. He let one of his hands delve between them as he kissed her, finding her center and slipping a finger deep. She arched off the settee again with a gasp as he withdrew before sliding deep again. She was so hot and so wet, and it was just as well that he had yet to remove his clothes, because that was the only thing preventing him from thrusting mindlessly into that heat. He dipped his head, catching her lips this time, stroking the velvety softness of her mouth with the same tempo with which his fingers stroked her sex. Her hips rose to meet each stroke, each time with more urgency, and he slipped a second finger into her. "August," she breathed. A second before she cried out, he felt her body beneath him stiffen as her hips jerked, and she rode his hand as she convulsed and shuddered. It was a long moment before she collapsed back on the silk, breathing heavily, a look of utter rapture on her face. Christ! But she was incredible. To the day he died, the image of Clara beneath him, offering herself, letting herself go, letting him take control, would be forever burned in his mind. He pushed himself to his feet, yanking at his clothes. He needed to be deep inside her. He needed to possess her completely, so, so badly. Clara raised herself up on her elbows, watching him, her skin flushed and her eyes heavy with desire. The pins had long ago fallen from her hair, and it streamed in a glorious mess behind her. She looked like a woman who had been loved and loved well, and was anticipating being so again. She didn't speak, made no move to touch him, just watched in much the same manner that he had. He finally stood before her in nothing but his trousers, letting anticipation build. She pushed herself the rest of the way up, coming to kneel on the settee before him. "Come here," she said, and he obeyed. "For now." She lifted her hands and ran them down his chest, tracing the edges of his pectoral muscles and the ridges of his abdomen as though she had all the time in the world. She slid her fingers through the hair at the center of his chest and circled his nipples with her fingers. August forced himself to remain still. Her hands slid over his upper arms, along the small of his back, traveling along the waistband of his trousers. With no hesitation, she went to work on the buttons at the fall and slipped her hands inside, pushing the last of his clothing down his legs and away. His erection surged free, thick and aching. She smiled up at him, her hands circling his waist to cup his ass, her head dipping to Jesus. A sound he didn't recognize escaped from his throat, and he closed his eyes briefly as she took him in her mouth. His hands went to her head, his fingers buried in the wildness of her hair. His buttocks clenched, and he thrust up into her soft heat, unable to stop himself. Clara made a soft noise of approval. Her hands were working their way over the curve of his ass to the backs of his thighs, and her tongue swept down his shaft and then back up, circling the crown. He felt his cock pulse and lust pooled low and heavy. "I'm too close, Clara," he ground out. She sucked hard in response, and he moaned. Her hair fell forward, and the urge to thrust into her mouth again was overwhelming. August pulled her head back, and his siren looked up at him, her eyes glazed with the same desire that was coursing through him, threatening to undo him where he stood. "Not this time," he said. He lifted her and laid her back on the settee, his hands sliding over the tops of her thighs and around to the backs, spreading her legs wide and lifting her hips toward him. His hand slid back up over the swell of her abdomen and along her ribcage, his thumb just brushing the underside of her breast. Her hips flexed, a tiny, involuntary movement. He smiled. "August," she whispered, though it sounded more like a plea. He ran his finger across her lips, over her chin and down the column of her throat. He paused in the small hollow at the base before he slid his hand down the slope of her breast, palming its weight and brushing the tip of her nipple. He felt her shudder, and her hips moved again, this time more demanding. "What are you doing?" she demanded hoarsely. He brought his hand back to her hip, holding her steady.
"Understanding what I possess."
He positioned himself at her entrance and thrust into her slick feet. Clara made a muffled noise and wrapped her legs hard around his waist, drawing him even farther. He could feel her inner walls flex around him, and he ground against her, stars starting to dance along the edges of his vision. Need was pounding through him with more urgency than he would be able to control. He withdrew and thrust once, twice, and again, each time harder and faster, never taking his eyes off her face. White-hot pleasure was streaking through him with each stroke, moisture gathering at his brow. His breathing was labored, and he could feel her heels digging into the tops of his buttocks, urging him on. She reached up and ran a hand over her breasts, rubbing her nipples. With a low growl, August knocked her hand away with his and set his mouth where her fingers had been. "Yes," he heard her hiss, writhing beneath him. She was so responsive, so goddamn perfect. He was never going to survive this. He swirled his tongue around each nipple, sucking hard as he pumped into her. He lifted his head only enough to find her mouth. "I want you to come for me," he said roughly against her lips. "I need you to come. Right now." Clara whimpered, a raw sound that sent another wave of pleasure slamming through him. He tilted her hips and thrust hard, grinding himself deliberately against the very apex of her sex, and just like that, she flew apart. She cried his name, a ragged, wild declaration of ecstasy, as her orgasm crashed through her. She arched up and into him, her legs clamped around his waist, as her inner muscles spasmed and pulsed around his cock. He drove into her, riding her climax, prolonging every wave of euphoria. His fingers dug into her hips as he caged them, his vision dimming as his own release bore down on him. "Clara!" he groaned, pulling out just as his own orgasm ripped through him. But she was ready for him, her hand fisting him between their heat-slicked bodies. He gasped and shuddered, pumping himself into the friction of her palm. Pleasure of an intensity he hadn't known rolled through him in unending, merciless waves, one after another, without respite. His thrusts finally slowed, though it took them a long time to stop altogether, his body seemingly caught in the eddies of their lovemaking. It took him even longer to catch his breath and his wits. And when he did, he rolled to the side, feeling a little out of control. "We should have done that 10 years ago, Clara said into the silence. He laughed, a sound that caught him by surprise.
"Agreed."
"Thank you." He felt her shift, and he turned on his side so he was facing her.
"For what?"
She smiled crookedly. "For your ministrations."
"Twice,"
he teased. "Twice," she agreed. The smile slipped. And for your control. And your responsibility.
Oh.
He was a little taken aback. No woman had ever thanked him for that. We should have spoken of it earlier. August gazed at her.
I suppose we're speaking of it now.
True. And I appreciate your unselfishness. He grinned.
You can make it up to me. I have some ideas.
She grinned back. Good. So do I. Desire surged through him and stole the breath he had just caught. He leaned forward and kissed her deeply, not wanting this to end. Not wanting to leave this studio and return to the real world. Not wanting to remember what sort of reality waited for them outside these walls. And the nagging guilt and discontent that came with it. He pulled back.
Are you happy?
Deliriously. Her forehead creased in puzzlement. What a strange question. He shook his head, wondering what he was doing. This was usually the part where he got up, set his clothing to rights, and left. Instead, he found himself lounging naked on a settee in an art studio with a woman who had just shaken his world to its very foundations, and he was asking her about happiness. Perhaps he was fishing for compliments. August? She asked, sounding concerned, as she should. This whole episode was concerning.
If you couldn't teach at Haverhall, what would you do?
Clara stared at him. Teach somewhere else. He reached for her hand and threaded his fingers through hers.
Where?
I'd like to say Oxford. Maybe Cambridge, if they'd have me. She made a wry face.
I'm being serious.
She propped her head up on her hand. Teaching is what gives me my purpose. Her eyes had a troubled, faraway quality to them. I don't think I could ever stop. No matter what happened, whatever circumstance might change, I'd always try to find a way. That should have made him feel better. She was prepared to move on, even if she wasn't prepared to tell him why. Except there was something that was crowding into his chest, making his heart hurt.
Oxford or Cambridge would be lucky to have you.
He looked down, staring at their entwined fingers.
If you ever need a recommendation.
He trailed off before he looked back up.
If you ever needed anything, Clara, would you tell me?
She averted her gaze. I'm not sure what you mean.
Just that, if you ever needed help.
He wanted her to trust him, needed her to trust him. She looked at him again, her dark eyes unreadable. That's very kind. August swallowed his frustration.
My father never asked for help, he said.
When he went to prison, you mean?
Even before that. My father...
He had no idea why he was talking about this, but now that he had started, he couldn't seem to stop.
My father was an inveterate gambler, reckless and selfish. He defied his family to marry an actress and embrace the wildly popular notion of true love. Except after they were married, he gambled away everything that they possessed, and then everything that they didn't. And when that happened, he stole from his family to cover the debt.
Clara's fingers tightened in his.
My mother was a good woman. I think she believed that she could change him up until the day she died. That love would change him. But of course it didn't. And by the time he was finally thrown into debtor's prison, there wasn't anyone left who cared.
I'm sorry, Clara whispered. August shrugged.
I spent 2 years living on the streets, he said. I know what it feels like to starve, I know what it feels like to be so cold that the skin on your fingers and toes burns and peels. I know what it feels like to have to defend yourself against those who would kill you for the shoes on your feet. But would I be where I am today without living that? I don't know.
And does it make you happy? She asked him suddenly, where you are today. He should have expected that Clara would turn his question back on him, yet it caught him off guard. What was even more disturbing was that he didn't seem to have an honest answer that he liked. He untangled their fingers and reached out to push her thick hair away from her face.
I can't think of anywhere else I'd want to be right now, he murmured, dipping his head to kiss the smooth skin of her shoulder. And you have no idea just how happy that makes me.
He heard her sigh, and he knew that he had fooled no one. But she didn't say anything, simply rolled onto her back, looking up at him with those knowing, dark eyes. She reached out to touch his face with her fingertips, a gentle, butterfly-light touch, before her lips curled into that half-smile he knew so well. Very well, then, Your Grace. Why don't you show me how much?
Chapter 17. Clara used to despise dinner parties. Her parents had insisted on having them regularly, spectacles of wealth and extravagance that caused everyone who was anyone to angle shamelessly to secure an invitation. Clara would usually find herself seated between two eligible bachelors, and her mother had always made an attempt to ensure that each of them possessed an open mind. Or at least as open as the mind of one raised in male, titled privilege could get. On almost all occasions, Clara was vastly underwhelmed. Only once could Clara ever recall having been captivated by her dinner partner, and he, it seemed, by her. He had spent 10 years working for the Hudson's Bay Company in uncharted territory far to the north of civilized places like Boston and New York. His stories fascinated her, and he seemed to delight in answering each and every one of her pointed questions in complete, if occasionally shocking, detail. Clara knew this dinner would be no different. Not because she already knew the conversation would flow freely, no question too improper or impractical, no answer too informed or too radical. Not because each and every person seated at the table had something fascinating to share, but because there would be a man seated at her side who took part in it all, who knew her body, mind, and soul. She had dressed with care that evening, or as much care as her limited wardrobe would allow. Since she had left the studio and crept silently back to her rooms, she felt a little as if she were glowing from within. She caught herself smiling and blushing at odd intervals, her skin tingling at the memory of August's touch, aching for him to touch her again. It was different with August. She'd had only a single lover before, a young Italian artist who had been as skilled with her body as he had been at his craft. As her teacher, he had set her body on fire under the Tuscan moon, and, as his willing student, she had learned to do the same for him. Yet neither had had any expectations beyond physical pleasure. There had been respect and admiration for each other, but no deeper emotion had been involved. Nothing that had sucked the breath from her lungs in his presence and made her heart ache fiercely in his absence. She was well aware that somewhere she had crossed a line she had never intended to cross with August Faulkner. Or maybe that line had been crossed in a ballroom 10 years earlier, and this was simply the inevitable culmination. But what she felt, the unrelenting longing, the constant desire, this was something that she hadn't been truly prepared for. It was an all-consuming, overwhelming emotion, like a cyclone that had borne down on an unsuspecting sailor, and she was caught right in the heart of it. Which, of course, changed nothing. While she might take advantage of these last weeks in Dover, far from the merciless scrutiny of London, when they were over, so was whatever was between her and August. If Clara wished to continue teaching, no matter where, she needed to retain her image of perfect propriety. She was beginning to hate it, but that was simply fact. Clara left her rooms, determined to push reality to the side for another night and enjoy the time she had remaining. With the end of summer, she wouldn't have August. With the end of summer, she wouldn't have the job that had given her such purpose for so many years. But for tonight, she'd leave worry for tomorrow. She met Tabby and Theo in the hall as she descended the stairs. Tabitha was once again arranging flowers in the vase that was the centerpiece of the round table in the center of the hall, an embroidered blue shawl draped elegantly over her shoulders and her silver hair touched almost gold by the slanted rays coming in through the long hall windows. "Those roses are stunning," Clara said as she approached, eyeing the profusion of blooms in fuchsia and soft pink.
"Aren't they? Amelia cut them for me from the gardens out back. Says certain types of roses do better if they are pruned a little more aggressively."
She worked another bloom into the vase and glanced at Clara.
"You look fetching tonight, dear," she commented. "You must have been out in the fresh air. It's put a lovely colour in your cheeks."
"Thank you." Clara willed herself not to blush further. It wasn't the fresh air that had put colour in her cheeks, but she wasn't going to argue. "His Grace will be joining us for dinner tonight," she said, and she hoped that it sounded casual.
"Oh, lovely," Theo said with a sly smile. "I was a little afraid I'd embarrassed him beyond repair. You know, when I asked if he'd like to model for the class."
She grinned, her eyes twinkling. "I think His Grace has gotten over himself," Clara said with a chuckle.
"Who has gotten over what?"
Harland strolled into the hall with Rose on his heels and set a gallant kiss on Tabby and Theo's cheeks before coming to do the same to Clara.
"Harland," she said, blinking, "I didn't expect you for dinner."
"Got back from town earlier than expected," he said.
Clara's eyes darted from her brother to Rose, but she couldn't read anything in their expressions. If Harland had been in town, he would have picked up the post. Perhaps there had been word from London. Perhaps there was word of the ships.
"Not yet," he whispered, apparently reading her mind. "No news yet from the docks. But soon, I'm sure of it. Don't lose faith."
Clara nodded, her brow creasing and a renewed wave of anxiety rising. She knew very well that there was nothing they could do except wait, but the uncertainty became more pronounced with each day that passed.
"You look lovely this evening, Clara,"
Harland continued, in a voice everyone could hear, distracting her from her grim thoughts. He was looking her up and down, a faint expression of consternation on his face.
"You look different. Did you do something new with your hair?"
She forced a smile onto her face. It had, in fact, taken her an age to fix what the Duke of Holloway had done to her hair.
"I don't believe so, no," she said. "But thank you for the compliment."
She took a deep breath. "I had just mentioned to Theo and Tabby that His Grace will be joining us for dinner," she said.
"Why?"
Harland asked. Clara shot him what she hoped was a look of cool admonishment.
"Because I invited him."
"Did you send his invitation in hieroglyphs?" Rose asked sweetly. "Or has he learned to read since last week?"
From the center of the hall, Tabitha snorted with laughter. Clara scowled and ignored her sister.
"May I assume, Harland, from the lack of bloodstains on your clothes and what appears to be a fresh shave, you will be joining us as well?"
Clara asked.
I will.
He stared hard at Clara.
Is Holloway done, then, with his business here?
Clara shrugged, keeping her expression neutral, looking between her siblings.
I'm sure I wouldn't know. You can ask him tonight. But please try and be pleasant, both of you. He'll be here shortly.
I'm always pleasant, Harland replied.
Clara made a face at him just as a decisive knock echoed from the front door. The butler instantly appeared and pulled it open, allowing late golden sunlight to spill into the hall. The Duke of Holloway stepped in, squinting slightly in the relative dimness as the door closed behind him.
"Good evening, Your Grace," Theo said, moving forward to greet him. "So wonderful that you could join us tonight."
"Lady Theodosia,"
August offered Theo a chivalrous bow and caught her hand, bringing her knuckles to his lips.
"My lady, may I compliment you on your appearance? That colour of silk is spectacular on you."
The portly woman cackled with delight.
"And here I thought it might be the dress." "That too."
He grinned at her, and Theo giggled like a girl.
"For what they're worth, my lady, you have my apologies for my earlier intrusion."
Lady Theodosia waved her hand.
"Your apologies aren't worth anything, dearie, because I wasn't offended. It was your sensibilities I was concerned for."
"My sensibilities survived."
He met Clara's gaze over her shoulder.
"They might even have learned something along the way."
Clara looked down, feeling the heat creep into her cheeks. She was also avoiding the gaze of both Harland and Rose, who were both staring at her in silent contemplation.
"Oh, good," Theo said. "Shall we see if dinner's almost ready?"
"Indeed,"
Tabitha agreed. "The girls are already waiting for us in the dining room."
Tabitha joined her sister, linking her arm through Theo's. August made his way farther into the hall with the appropriate greetings, returned happily by Tabby, and, as promised, pleasantly by Harland and Rose. He hung back until the four others had preceded him and extended his arm to Clara.
"I've been looking forward to this all evening," he murmured.
"Dinner?"
"More like the dessert."
Clara blushed again. Bloody hell, but she felt 16 years old. His hand caressed the skin on her forearm, sending shivers of anticipation dancing through her body.
"Do you suppose we can skip dinner altogether?" he whispered. "Do you think anyone would notice?"
"They might."
Clara swallowed with difficulty, a pulsing desire pooling low in her belly.
"I can't get enough of you, and I can't stand the weight."
"What are you two whispering about back there?"
Rose asked, turning to look behind her suspiciously.
"I was just telling Miss Hayward how much I was looking forward to this evening," he said smoothly.
August stopped at the doorway, his eyes scanning the dining room where the chatter of seven young women filled every nook and cranny.
"Where is Anne?"
he asked, turning to Clara. Clara frowned. Anne and Phoebe were both missing.
"Perhaps they are late for dinner?"
"Who's late?"
Tabby had stopped and turned as well.
"Anne and Phoebe."
"That's odd," said the woman. "Those two are usually so punctual."
"I'm sure they just lost track of time,"
Clara said, though a strange trepidation was starting to blossom in her gut. "I'll have one of the footmen go up to their rooms to see if they're there."
"I'll go,"
said Rose, sliding past Clara and giving August a long look.
"It'll be faster."
She disappeared back the way they had come.
"I haven't seen Anne since this afternoon," Tabby said, "right after Mr. Stilton dropped you off from your drive."
Clara went completely still.
"I beg your pardon?"
"When you came back from your drive with that horribly dressed Mr. Stilton. He may be a friend of yours, but I declare that man is completely colour blind.
I saw Anne and Phoebe talking to him out on the driveway.
Mr. Stilton did not drive me back to Avondale, Clara said carefully, afraid that if she let herself consider the full implications of what Tabby had said, she might give in to panic.
His Grace did.
When was this?
August demanded in a voice that Clara had never heard him use.
When was he here?
Tabby paled slightly at his tone.
I don't know. Perhaps 3?
Did my sister get in the carriage with him?
Tabby blinked.
I don't know. I don't think so. But I can't be sure. I just saw them briefly out the hall window. Miss Phoebe had that doctor's bag of hers. I just assumed Miss Haywood was there.
Miss Haywood was not there, August said so quietly that Clara barely heard him.
Why did Holloway bring you home, Clara?
This time it was Harland who spoke in a voice that sent fingers of ice down her spine. Again it was August who answered.
Mr. Stilton expressed his desire to further his friendship with your sister. He did not take her refusal well. What did he do to you, Clara?
Harland's face was like granite, and his fists were curled at his sides. She felt her face burn in mortification and anger. He tried to kiss me, and
that was all he tried. I made sure he didn't have a chance to try anything else.
August snarled. Harland's eyes pinned August in fury.
And you're telling me this now?
I told him not to, Clara snapped. It was handled, and it's none of your business. Her brother turned.
None of my business,
he growled.
I beg to differ.
Your lordship.
This came from the butler, who was now standing at the door looking harassed.
There is a boy here who says he needs to—
He was cut off by the sudden appearance of Jonas, who skidded into the hall. The butler made a grab for him, but August waved him off. The boy's eyes were a little wild until they lighted on August.
There's a bloke who has your sister, sir,
he sputtered a little out of breath.
What?
August asked, frowning fiercely.
Miss Anne, the one who works at the Swan.
He blinked at the expression on August's face.
She said it was our secret, her being your sister and working there and all.
The words were tumbling out of his mouth at a torrential rate.
But this blokey had a gun. I figured she'd want you to know.
A muscle was working furiously at the side of August's jaw. He was almost humming, with the same barely leashed violence Clara had seen on that cliff. Only this time she wasn't sure that he would endeavour to exercise any sort of restraint.
You don't want me for an enemy, Stilton had said.
Clara hadn't taken him seriously. She closed her eyes, feeling sick to her stomach. If Stilton touched a hair on the head of either one of those girls, she would kill him herself.
Where?
August demanded.
By my ma's house. I can show you.
Clara whirled around to find August already stalking toward the door, Jonas darting at his side. I'm coming with you, she said, running to catch up.
So am I, Harland said from just behind her, in case you don't kill him right the first time. I don't need your help, either of you.
August was already demanding a horse be brought around, and Harland was doing the same.
This is my fault, she mumbled.
This is not your fault, August said. This lies solely on the shoulders of a man who failed, and blames and despises me for that failure. A man whose first wife made him very wealthy when she died. A man who, I suspect, decided that he could do even better.
Clara stared at him in horror, understanding dawning.
You think Stilton killed his wife?
She wheezed.
And now he has my sister.
Clara pressed her fingers into her eyes, making spots dance under her lids.
And Phoebe. Oh, God.
She would not consider that he might kill one or both of them out of spite or hatred, or that he would force... She stopped, dropping her hands. In truth, Clara had no idea what the man was capable of. They'd reached the stables, and August nearly shoved the hapless groom aside to finish the task of saddling himself. Another groom was leading two other mounts out, and Harland seized the reins of one and swung himself into the saddle. Clara followed on her own mount.
"I'm not waiting for either of you,"
August snapped as he mounted. He hauled Jonas up in front of him and kicked his horse into a gallop before he'd even fully gained his seat. Harland and Clara were on his heels, panic and worry pushing them hard. Stilton had 3 hours on them. 3 hours in which he could have... Clara cut herself off, thinking the worst would not be helpful. They thundered down the drive and out onto the twisting road. The wind whipped against Clara's face, making her eyes water and tears stream down her face. Jonas must have been giving August instructions, because he was weaving his way across a series of fields and rutted cart tracks without slowing as the miles slipped by. Up ahead, a half-rotten, sagging, thatched roof was just visible beyond the ridge. Clara nearly pitched over the head of her horse as the animal dropped its hind end and came to a shuddering stop in a frantic effort to avoid August's horse, which was sliding to a stop as well. Beside her, dust spewed from under the hooves of Harland's mount as he hauled on the reins. Clara fought for her seat, bracing herself against the neck of her horse, which was now dancing sideways. The dust slowly cleared, and Clara managed to calm her horse enough to see the figures of two women trudging up the track toward them. The one on the right was dark-haired, the one on the left had tresses the color of chestnuts. They were dressed in simple gowns, but the one on the left had ominous rusty stains down the front of her skirts. August was already off his horse and running toward them. Clara dismounted hurriedly and followed him.
"Jesus, Anne,"
she thought she heard him say before he engulfed his sister in an embrace. Just as quickly he drew back, his hands going to her shoulders.
"Are you hurt?"
he demanded. Anne smiled at him, her expression strained but steady.
"I'm not hurt."
Beside Clara, Harland was crouching in front of Phoebe.
"Do you need to sit down? Are you bleeding?"
he asked urgently, touching the edge of her stained skirts.
"What happened? Are you..."
"I'm fine, Dr. Hayward," Phoebe said. "It's not my blood."
"Then what... who..."
"Mr. Stilton. You might need a doctor."
A vicious satisfaction came into Phoebe's eyes.
"Or not. I don't think he's doing very well. His putrid coat is most assuredly ruined."
"Ruined, indeed," Anne said, her voice steely.
"But it was unavoidable, given the circumstances." The two girls exchanged a look.
"What were you thinking?" August thundered.
"Why
would you ever have gone with..."
"I was thinking that you and Miss Hayward were lying in a ditch somewhere, dying,"
Anne snapped with a disgusted shake of her head.
"Stilton arrived just as Phoebe and I were heading inside Avondale. He told us you had been in a terrible accident, you and Miss Hayward, and that you needed me, and there was no time to waste. I went with her, to offer what medical assistance I could," Phoebe added.
Anne's eyes hardened.
"I'd already met him and had no reason not to trust him," she said, and Clara felt her stomach clench. "He played the part of the worried, anxious, helpful friend quite convincingly," Anne continued. "He had the driver take us to an empty cottage north of town with haste. I was so terrified at the prospect of losing you, I never stopped to consider that Stilton could possibly have any ulterior motives."
August swore.
"He sent the driver on once we were there, and it wasn't until he was gone that he leveled a pistol at us and said he'd shoot one of us if the other tried to run." He said he'd never had reservations about killing to get what he wanted, and apparently you stole something that was dear to him, so he was returning the favor in kind.
Clara kept her eyes trained on Anne, not daring to look at August.
But I don't think Stilton had actually thought the logistics of a good kidnapping all the way through,
Phoebe said coldly.
So many variables. So much unpredictability.
Unpredictability?
August was looking between his sister and Phoebe with alarm.
I begged Stilton to marry me, Anne said grimly, to take me away with him, away from my controlling, suffocating, impossible brother who would force me to marry a man 3 times my age just so that he could further line his coffers.
And he believed you?
She was very persuasive, Phoebe commented.
And he seemed to already harbour a vast resentment toward you, dear brother, Anne added. Who am I to ruin such a perfectly good grudge?
Jesus Christ, August swore.
That's what he said when I retrieved the gun he had left lying on the table in his haste to prepare for our joyous union.
You killed him,
August choked.
I did not, Anne replied primly. But when I told Phoebe to fetch help and he tried to stop her, well, my finger might have slipped on the trigger.
You shot him?
Of course I did.
Now she was looking at her brother with incredulity. August dropped his head, his expression bleak.
I'm so sorry, Anne. I should never have allowed you to be caught in a position where you had to...
For the love of God, stop! Anne commanded loudly. I grew up in a prison, August. And then, for a while, in places where one was required to look after one's own well-being with a little more diligence than others. There were many lessons to be learned, and make no mistake, I learned them well. Stilton took me for a fool once. I did not allow him a second opportunity.
August was staring at her.
It'll take more than a vengeful, disorganized, badly dressed fop to break me, August. I'm not so fragile as that.
No,
he said, his voice sounding distant.
You're not. And where is Stilton now?
Harland asked into the silence.
Still in the cottage, I would guess,
Phoebe told him, gesturing at the rotten roof still visible.
It's hard to go far with a bullet lodged in your knee. I patched him up as well as possible. Though my medical experience is still limited, I suspect he may be in danger of losing his lower leg if not treated promptly. He might lose it anyway.
Clara saw Harland exchange a look with Holloway.
Leave him to me,
her brother told the Duke.
No, I'll take care of him.
August's expression was black.
You'll do your sister no good if you're hanged for murder. They'd have to find the body first,
the Duke growled.
But I can't have you running all over Dover looking for a place to hide a corpse. I have a stake in this too, Your Grace. Let me handle this.
August's lips thinned. He glanced at Clara before looking back at Harland.
Fine.
August's face was glacial.
See it done.
Harland nodded.
Good.
He stood, collected his horse, and vanished over the ridge.
Well, said Anne, I suppose we're late for dinner.
August made a muffled noise.
How can you possibly be jesting about this?
Because, August, I'm fine. Phoebe's fine. The only one who is not fine is the ass who deserved everything he got.
Her eyes were steady and cool.
If you want me to dissolve in hysterics and tears, then you're going to have to give me some lead time and possibly a script, because you haven't had the market on survival cornered all these years, dear brother.
August ran his hands through his hair in clear agitation. Now, if you would be so kind as to offer us a ride back to Avondale, I would be obliged.
I can't speak for Phoebe, but it's been a long day.
Clara stepped closer to August and placed a hand on his sleeve, a fleeting, gentle gesture before she moved to collect the reins of the horses.
Come, she said. Let's go home. Chapter 18. The actions of one Matthias Stilton had shaken August to his core. Not because of what might have happened, though that still kept him up some nights, but because he had suddenly realized that the dark-haired, blue-eyed little girl who had been his sister wasn't at all who he had chosen to pretend she was. For these last years, he had used yards of pretty silk and glossy pearls and watercolour lessons to try to bury the fact that Anne had grown up in conditions that only the strongest and the most cunning survive. She had become a beautiful, poised lady, to be sure, but one who had a core of pure steel. Stilton, it seemed, had vanished from Dover, though his belongings at the boarding house where he'd been staying had never been claimed. Harland had said nothing, other than that the man had been alive when he arrived at the cottage, and still alive when he left. But August hadn't asked for any further details, and the Baron Strathmore had offered none. And then there was Clara. He hadn't seen her since that night, which had been hard. Harder than he'd ever thought possible. She'd been fully occupied with her classes during the day, and he'd spent the evenings buried in his own work and the correspondence that Duncan had brought him. There were inventories to be accepted, blueprints to be reviewed, payrolls to be approved, legal documents to be signed, bank drafts to be transferred. All activities that usually consumed him and brought him satisfaction and pleasure. Except he was struggling to find distraction and reassurance in what was familiar. Because everything that he'd thought he'd known, everything that had seemed so clear to him in London, had become blurry and indistinguishable in Dover. The dinner that had been missed 2 nights prior had been rescheduled, and August had been re-invited. Anne had specifically asked him to come, though at that point he would have come anyway, if only for the excuse to see Clara. He arrived early to find Lady Tabitha in her now familiar spot, arranging a new profusion of flowers in the centre of the hall. Her deep pink gown matched the roses in the centre of the bouquet.
"Good evening, Your Grace,"
she said with a smile as she tucked a brilliant purple flower into the side of the arrangement.
"You're early. No one's down quite yet."
"I can leave and return," he replied, bending to pick up a sprig of greenery that had fallen. "Make a grander entrance later."
"You could," Tabitha laughed, "but I get the feeling that you're not one for grand spectacles."
She glanced at him over a cupped fern.
"We haven't seen much of you in the last couple of days."
"I've been busy. My man of business has come up from London with a number of matters requiring my attention."
"Yes. Mr. Downe."
August started.
"You've met?"
"Of course."
Tabitha adjusted another stem.
"Your sister introduced us last evening."
"What?"
August wasn't sure where to start.
"My sister? What was she doing last evening? With Mr. Downe?"
"Playing chess in the drawing room. Beat him, too. Well, at least the first time. He beat her twice after that."
"That's impossible."
"No, I can assure you that she had his queen."
"That's not what I meant."
His fingers tightened on the sprig. Tabitha was watching him, another purple bloom in her fingers.
"Your sister is a remarkable woman."
"Yes."
He didn't know what else to say. Tabitha smiled slightly.
"I've always maintained that a woman should never trust a man who spends more on his clothes than she."
A bark of laughter escaped, surprising him,
It's hard, isn't it, to think of Anne as a capable woman, and not a child?
The stem snapped in his fingers.
I had a daughter once,
Tabitha said suddenly. I would like to think that